saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Welcome to One Hit Minute Productions. I'm your host, Blake Howard. This is a very special interview with director Samuel Van Grinsven. He is a Kiwi-born director who's based in Sydney. He's done two films, basically his graduation film from film school, Sequin in a Blue Room, and a second feature in 2024, Went Up the Hill, which... I've seen, it's a fascinating little ghost story on as its genre construct, but it has these two unbelievably psychologically complex and emotionally wretching performances from both Dacre Montgomery and Vicky Creeps. Terrific little film. It's had a bit of a splash for about the last 9 months on the festival circuit, ending at the Melbourne International Film Festival prior to its theatrical release in Australia. So I talked to him all about it. I hope you enjoy. Sam, welcome. Congratulations on the film. I want to ask you, you've been on a 9 month run with this bad boy.
Yeah.
How does it feel? How are you feeling the 9 months of toil after having made it? Because I assume that you guys made this fast, being an independent film.
Yeah.
You got it out there. It's had a great response. But how are you feeling now after 9 months of talking about it? Is it feel weird to still be like, am I in a dream state where I don't know what day is passing? What is going on?
Yeah, a little bit. Where I'm in Melbourne right now for the Melbourne International Film Festival. And this is our final festival stop. So it's nice in the sense that I'm here with my lead actor, Dacre. So it kind of does feel like a nice bookend to everything, but no, you're completely right. It feels surreal, and the actual shoot was so long ago now that you begin to move on, right? Like I'm sort of gearing up to make my third film, so it's nice. I feel definitely ready after this period of being able to share it as widely as we have. I feel kind of ready to let go and finally release it out into the world. So it's good.
Yeah, I don't say that as any slight on the film, which I think is terrific. I just say that as like, researching you and seeing the journey that it's taken for it now doing its festival run and then getting releases. I often wonder, I'm like, in like the smallest ways in my life, people have asked me about my shows and sometimes like, I'm so tired. I've said everything I could possibly say. And then I feel a lot of empathy for you as a filmmaker going like, oh my God, he's another guy 9 months later who might ask me some of the same stuff. But I'm going to start backwards because what was really exciting right from the beginning of you talking about this film and getting a festival release is your inspiration for the film, something really cool, just simple images coming to your mind, simple concepts, and you build it around. And I wonder, at what stage of this last 9 months did a new project come to your mind? Like, are you finding a similar pattern in your points of inspiration? Like, is there sort of, I've got a lull, I can actually have some final quiet, I'm not in production. Like, do you find that this longer release has actually really crystallized what you want to do next?
Yeah, in a lot of ways. I so far, I'm approaching film three now, and I've so far it's been the same moment each time where I've kind of drilled in and nailed into what I want to do next. But I think every film, at least for me so far, every film is a reaction to the film before and a response to the film before.
Yes,
and that's not in sort of any negative way. It's more that, okay, I've explored that. I've done that. And now every instinct in my body is telling me to do this. And and usually for me, and the way I guess my brain works, I'm quite a visual person. The way I write for screenplays is I write very visual screenplays, and I'm obviously quite a visual director. I really care about cinematography and constructing that world with the team. And so it makes sense that it starts with an image. But yeah, I think after. I was really interested in sort of genre hybridity in my first two films. So my first one is a coming of age thriller, and then my second one is a drama with elements of horror, but all kind of under this subgenre of a ghost story. And now I feel really ready to just tackle pure naturalism. So that's where I've sort of been led to in this last 9 months.
Yeah, it's I think genre shouldn't be a dirty word. You should never be discouraged on your first two
No.
works. I think that that's like you can bundle so many silly movie like so many silly synopses on movies like, oh, it's just a ghost story.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, it's not.
No, it's not. It's so much
The
more than that.
Exorcist is not just a ghost story.
Yeah.
The Shining is not a haunted house. It's like
Absolutely.
these are I'm reticent always as an Aussie to be like, listen, genre is not a dirty word, guys. Like
No, it's, I mean, it's, I love it. Like, and I'm definitely working on another project at the moment where I want to step into like the complete full horror space. But I mean, I think especially in Australia, like, it feels like there's sort of a horror new wave happening right now, and
yes.
it's thrilling. And even overseas and at the festivals, I think the most exciting filmmakers are coming out of genre right now. So I love it. I think it's like the best kind of playground to definitely launch in. But also there's so much you get to play with, and I think audience expectations is the real fun part of being able to play with genre. There's so much kind of like audience baggage that comes with it, and you can. In your first few films or whatever film it is, you can really play against those or toward those. And I find that really fun with genre.
Yeah, there's a Aussie, great Aussie author called John Birmingham who's written lots of like long historic tomes and also like weird sci-fi fantasies. And when asked about it, I remember this quote all the time. He's like, they're like, oh, so when you're doing a genre piece, do you like run away from genre conventions? He's like, no, I run screaming towards them. If
Yeah.
there's a mad scientist, he's gonna do something that's gonna blow everything up. He goes, I want to run towards, I need that character because then that's gonna unlock me to get to the bits that I want to explore.
Yeah.
It's really cool to hear you think talking about your next film. Jori Annis, who is your co-writer on this, was quoted saying that you guys, while you have a very visual and organic and sort of storytelling style, that you are very particular and the dialogue is very particular. And I just wanted to examine that because when I was watching Went Up the Hill and I was watching Dacre and I was watching Vicky, and there's just these electric sequences in the movie that are just ultimately what these two actors can make us conjure, and how your perspective as a filmmaker is making them evoke these emotions for the audience. And I just wondered, like, when you're so particular on like building everything there, does that give you the freedom to just follow their instincts? Because they feel to me like extremely instinctive actors. And I'm almost like, how do you keep them on a comma? How do you keep them on a beat? Like, although they're both brilliant at that, like, how do you keep them there? Because it feels like they're sort of caged sometimes. And that's the energy that you seem to harness so well in this.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, it's a constant push and pull in the best way. I really love working with actors that challenge you, and both Dacre and Vicky are very much those kind of actors. They're really in there making the film with you. To the point where they'll be talking about oh, I think it's take three, but with a little bit of take five. Like, they're really aware. In the best way. I love that it very much feels like a partnership, like we're making the film together. But no, to answer your question, I'm quite a specific director, I think I would say, especially in a visual sense. And I really love to lock in, and I'm very drawn to a still camera and a very composed frame. But
Thank you.
that can be really It can be really difficult for performance, and I'm always aware of that. You're really limiting you're asking your actor to stay in a box essentially. But I think what I try and do is I always try and turn that box into a playground for them.
Yes.
Make it as free as possible, but understanding the specificity of the tone and of the approach. But I think what I think something I always try and avoid is it can be you can get bored on a film set. And I don't mean bored of the content. I mean if you're really locking into a style, you after 3 weeks in, you can find yourself kind of being like, oh, maybe we should be like, I don't know, put this on a drone, or like maybe the scene should be handheld or something like that. And I always try and just be like, no, these were our instincts. This is what we wanted to do. And it's not just because I think that looks good, it's because this film is about control. And I'm trying to evoke this third ghostly character who's never on screen. We never really get to properly meet her. I'm trying to evoke her with every other tool in our toolbox. So bring her alive through the strictness of the cinematography, bring her alive through the fact that our camera doesn't move, it locks and it holds and it contains. And so for me, a lot of those rules are character based and they're thematic based and they're story based. But then working with someone like Vicky, who's just the most brilliant artist who I learned so much from as a director, the worst thing I could do as a director is not let her play because that's part of her process, right? So there's a scene in the film. This isn't a spoiler, but there's a scene in the film where she comes home from a crematorium, and I walked in the morning to talk Vicky through the scene and kind of hear what her instincts were on the actual morning of shooting it. And she turned around, and she said, "Okay, go with me. No dialogue." And I was like, okay, it's a dialogue scene, but sure. Okay, cool. And she was talking me through like her instincts and why she thinks her character wouldn't speak in the scene and why that would be overwhelming. And I just she was so right. Her instincts were so right. And what I had written was wrong. Or not wrong, it just as we were making the film, her character had grown and developed, and
You've done enough.
just
You've done
made
enough. Yeah,
exactly.
like I know the
Exactly.
exact scene you're talking about. I know it's not a spoiler to talk about, but it's like in that moment, it's overwhelming enough the reality of that situation. You
Yes.
almost don't want to hear what she has to say because the way that you shoot it, and it is sort of fleeting
Yeah.
in the movie, it like packs a wallop and it kind of stays with you. And you, it's an image that stayed with me after the film, that particular scene. And I think that, yeah, it's really interesting that you talk about like, because I think that's a really beautiful creative moment of like, all right, we've got all these creative people and we're here and we're all so locked in and
Yeah.
like it's working. Let's break it. You know what I
Yeah,
mean? It's
yeah.
a funny like, no, and you like you have to step outside yourself and go,
Yeah.
no, just
Yeah.
keep
But I mean,
going.
Vicky ended up, I told her, like, okay, I'm just going to put you in a wide and give you three takes and just do whatever you want. And she improvised all three versions. And all three of them have been in the film at some point in the process because they were all brilliant. And like,
Yes.
you just couldn't write that. It's that kind of like magic that only comes from it, like you're saying, like it's you're in it when you're making it. And no, that taught me a lot, and something I kept trying to invigorate throughout the process was just inviting these moments of play and improvisation and discovery, despite how strict the film is.
There's something I was going to ask just from a real technical standpoint, because I don't think we get to talk about it enough, is like your brilliant little film is set in a stunning location, this stunning house and a lake. And I often just wonder because just of the tech from a technical standpoint, like it doesn't feel like there's a lot of people in that house. It feels like you guys ran pretty lean and light when you were shooting, because it's obviously this house just feels like it would be breathing with like 100 people if you had like a huge amount of people in there. So like, can you tell us about sort of like your decisions around like how you're shooting some of those things from a really practical standpoint? Because I think from us admiring your work just as a piece of art, it's like, no, there was a small crew there who really were technical and knew exactly the dance they had to do with this architecture, because it wasn't like you were creating a set. And so like, how do you do that? Did you have a big crew? Was it like a tight crew and you guys had very meaningful movements? Because that house still feels so like, it does feel like a mausoleum. It feels like a it feels like a total echo chamber, and has the you're, and you're playing with that in the sonic sound, the sonic scape of the movie. But How did you shoot it? Was it a big crew? Was it just you got, you know, you and your I want to shout out your great DP,
That's perfect.
yeah, Tyson Perkins and Sherry Phillips, your production designer. So such excellent work. But like, was it you and Tyson and just like keeping it really lean and light so that you could navigate this, you know, the confines of a real place?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny to me. I'll be honest. Like, because I mean, my first film I made for it was my graduate. My first feature was my graduate project from film school. We made it for like $30,000, and you know, it was run and gun. A whole bunch of people coming together over love. So to me, the crew from Went Up the Hill felt gigantic. By any other film standard, it was probably a small crew. To me, I felt like it was an army. But I think I think what we were able to do, which you know, to my producers' credit, who are amazing, and to Tyson, my DOP's credit, I think what we did was we put the resources toward what this film specifically needed, and a lot of that was a lot of muscle behind lighting, because a lot of the language of the film, not just visually but in a story sense as well, is coming through across in lighting. So we had this lighting team in New Zealand, an all-female lighting team, and they were absolutely, I mean, their work in the film is brilliant, led by Tyson. And I think it was a lot of it came from that, but the house was an interesting place to shoot in that the aim was always to make it look smaller than it was. It's actually quite like a big location, so a lot of our choices and a lot lighting is doing a lot of that is condensing it down and making it more intimate, making it more secluded, making it more isolating. So to do that, it actually there's sort of a lot that goes into making it look as simplistic as it is. But yeah, I think my preference is always I really don't like a crowded set, especially when you're making something as intimate and as quiet as this film is. So I'm always trying to strip back, and I love having I clear the set and just sit in the space once the lighting's in place with the actors, just us three for 10, 15 minutes if I can, and just work on it and really find that moment of like, give the actors a chance to experience what it would be like to be sitting here if it was just the two of them, and then slowly bring everyone in. And that's not always achievable, you know, but I try to. And yeah, I think it's really difficult if what you're chasing is intimacy in a film. It's really, really difficult to conjure that when the room is, you know, packed with like a theatrical crowd.
You've got, you know, grips and lighting people and cameras, you know, it's and then you and then an assistant and then a runner and whatever the case may be. You've got like 10 or 15 people, and I think that you did such a great job making it feel like it was this lonely and isolated place. I want to start back at your and not to sort of overshare or make this exclusively about me, but had a recent passing, like an immediate family pass away. And in those moments, thank you. And I think that what you touched on so much is like, and I think it's a genre convention, and I think it's actually grown as people have become more familiar with it. And we talk about it, is like death brings weird shit. Like it just brings weird, it's weird conversations. It's absolutely unpredictable and weird feelings that roll in waves. And when I was watching this film, I was like, I think the chrysalis of the entire movie is just having like a funeral setting where a lot of people are there, family members have got interests, so to speak, in things. And I think is there's just a lot of weird stuff. There's nothing, you know, they what that's phrase of like nothing bringing people together like a wedding or a funeral. But I think that funerals come with so much more weird feelings and the lack of resolution. And I think that that was a really powerful thing. Did you draw, was that concept sort of baked into you and your co-writer's work, or was it something you were drawing on? Because I thought that particularly Dacre was like that coming in and being weird and having a lack of resolution, I think is a huge engine, you know, for his character for the whole thing. So I just wondered, like, was it some personal experience that you'd had, or was it something, because I just felt like you touched on a couple of those weird feelings in such a great way, and he got there in such a beautiful way as an actor that I was like, oh, this just, I don't know, just had like an unquantifiable touch that I wanted to talk to you about.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's a few things, a few things. So, my cast, who, yeah, they were just brilliant to work with. They were both drawn to this project for quite raw reasons in their own lives and their own experience, and they both talked about that publicly. So, and they so a lot of this was very on the surface and palpable for them.
Yes.
And I'm really lucky to have had their trust in bringing that to the screen, and the three of us, you know, working really, really, really deeply and intimately and honestly toward that. So I think that's an element of what you're talking about, of probably why it feels very tangible and real. But for Jory and I, my co-writer and I want to be specific about grief. You know, I think a lot of films, especially in this space, in this ghost story and horror space, touch on grief. But grief is really broad. And the two of us wanted to be specific about what the grief that we were touching on and driving toward was the first few days and first few weeks after.
Yes.
Because that time period, your memories of this person are really recent. Like, you know, like things in the house would still smell like them, or the last time you spoke to them, you could almost still hear it. Like those memories are really, really recent. But the other interesting thing that happens in those first few days and weeks is because you're sort of in this holding pattern, this sense of suspended grief, you're still programmed instinctually to be looking for the person, and you look for them, whether it's like during a funeral, relatives who look similar or maybe speak similar or have similar sense of humor or a tone to their voice. You're constantly looking for these reminders of them, and that's what creates that suspended state of grief. They're not fully gone yet.
And it's also the thing you hold on to, right? It's the thing that sometimes, that's why you rally around as a family, because then if you've got immediate relative sons, mothers, sisters, you know, you're holding that together so that you can kind of all slowly process the reality of the vacancy. You know, there is that. And I just think that these two being so connected, while there's this other crowd of people who pretend to kind of have been a part of this person's life, there's these two people right in the middle who are feeling the vacancy most. And I was that, I think you sketched out that. That's what I was feeling. I was looking at these two people going, yeah, these two feel it on a different frequency. And that's where the great spiritual and ghostly element of the story comes in. It's like, oh, the vacancy's not there. It's actually, the room's still full. There's three people in this house, or three spirits in this house. And so it's them contending with those things.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think another thing that came from that, like you're saying, is that that trying to retain that sense of realistic and grounded and almost naturalism around that suspended state of grief. But because we have this ghostly addition, something that was really important to us in the writing was, you know, this is a ghost who gets to come back through a mode of possession and inhabit a human body with full control. And we had to limit her. So our limit, we decided, was language. She can only speak if asked a question. And that for me was about trying to eliminate something so that it wouldn't be enough. It wouldn't be enough that this person is fully back. There's still a loss. And they keep, because she's almost here. She's almost human. She's almost tangible. They run after it even harder.
Yes. Yes. God, that's so fun. It's packaged with all this authentic, you know, striving for reality and naturalism. But also then you just spoke about like rules. You had to think of rules. That's fun. Rules are fun. It's like, well, what's our rule? What's our, what are we sprinkling onto the genre? Miff is here.
Yeah.
You're there right now.
Yeah.
You're on a final victory lap. This next project, When are you finally off of this victory lap, and when are you finally back making movies, which and being in these spaces? When is that happening?
So I fin we finished the screenplay of the next film, and we are in the midst of arranging all of that. So I'm hoping for early next year. But
Excellent.
yeah, I'm really taking I feel like I've learned a you know I've learned a lot from making my way up the hill in the best way, and I'm really taking my time with this one. The casting is really, really specific. So taking my time, and but yeah, I feel ready. So I'm excited, and hopefully shooting back here in Australia this time, which would be great.
I mean, look, I think Aussies can also just understand innately that like New Zealand is stunning. So if you have to shoot somewhere, it's like, look, yeah, I get it. I get why it was a New Zealand thing, but yeah, if you can shoot here, great. And
Yeah.
we obviously love to have you, but I don't think you should put that pressure. I think I want to ask, because you said the casting is specific. Is that a direct lesson of like Dacre and Vicky? Like you picked those two people, they brought so much to it. Is it like now that you're seeing, you know, because I've spoken to a lot of filmmakers in what I do, and sometimes there's like there should be a casting director Oscar, is one I get from a lot of directors, because they're like,
Yeah.
listen, if a casting director, if you get the right cast as a filmmaker, especially an aestheticist like you, it's like half my job's done. I've got the people who know that they understand the assignment that going in, and we can
Yeah.
talk about what I'm going for, and they bring a whole other dimension to it.
It's I think it's I mean it's probably the most important part of it all, but I had such a special experience with working with Vicky and Dacre that it just taught me a lot about the kinds of actors that I love to work with, and the kind of process that's important to me to be able to tell the right to tell a story. And yeah, the energy that I found in Dacre and Vicky is so much a part of what the end result of the film was, you know?
Yes.
And that's what I'm really carrying into the next work is there's a very specific kind of feeling I'm trying to capture, and that starts with finding that in the relationship with the right people.
Awesome. Well, Sam, good luck. Thank you so much. It's been so awesome talking to you. Best of luck. We've went up the hill at the fest, and you're on that final thing, and can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you so much, Blake. Appreciate it.
Save big money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save.